A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
A communication disruption can only mean one thing:
negotiation. We've lost all communication.
Invasion. What will the future of Star Wars bring?
You must contact me.
You must contact me and listen to Reed.
They wouldn't dare.
It's unthinkable.
In this CO Bibbles Babble Bubble Star Wars Prequels Appreciation Podcast.
It's outrageous.
Hello and welcome to CO Bibbles Babble Bubble. Wow, that was an awesome new intro theme we have going on there. The show is, you know, we're always open to new things, going to change up the logo soon, but we got a new intro song, and it works out perfect for the premiere of this very clever, wonderfully performed song. We have right here with us today the performer and the writer and the singer, the everything with it for the song right here himself. Mr. Zoologist is back on the show. Hello, my friend.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's great to be here. And yeah, what good timing when I've written a song just in time for the episode that I'm on next. What better way to go?
Oh, yes. It's, you know, the old intro that's, you know, carried us for the first 32 episodes of the show. You know, something I slapped together. And it's been fun, but everything is... needs a little bit of refreshing, and you know, I absolutely love the whole live music recorded thing, and it's really great, and we will continue to carry it for a long time to come. So thank you again for that.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And I'd just say it's an honor to be on episode 33, my favorite number. So what way to celebrate your 33rd episode by me a gift, your new theme song? I just thought you could use a little new theme song, and I accidentally gave a new theme song to another podcast, Conversations, because they asked me to answer some questions, and I did, but I gave them a song, and there you go.
It's only a matter of time until everybody is going to start listening to their, you know, their weekly lineup and of Star Wars podcasts. It's all going to be Zoologist music at the beginning. It's your slow takeover of the podcast music industry merger right there. Yeah, it's funny that you you know, mentioned this is episode 33. We almost landed you as a guest on a cycle here, that you were here on episode 33, you were on previously episode 22, and just missed the cut with episode 10.
Whoops,
we were so close in this little ordering. Another kind of fun tidbit here is that episode 22 was either I'd have to look back and things, but it was the first or second episode released during this kind of, I think it may have been the second, during this sort of quarantine stay in place madness that we're finding ourselves all through. So, you know, I've been working at home during this whole thing, and I've been releasing more episodes because people have more time on their hands. I've had a lot of guests, so it's nice to continue to come back around the circle where it all began. So,
that's what I thought. Hey, since we were locked down, it was like our first lockdown, and it was, what can I do? It's like, oh, I can be on a podcast. I can be up late. There won't be much work now going. So I thought, why not? And sort of let's do it again, because we've just been through a cycle where we got back out, got back to work a little bit, and things just sort of shut up a bit, like school's closed, summer open. So I'm sort of in and out, and yeah, still got time for another one, but another way to do it with my favorite number 33.
Absolutely wonderful. So this week we're going to be talking about something that I would say has played a role in the vast majority of episodes, since this is a prequels appreciation podcast, but we've never fully dedicated a whole episode to that, and that is an episode dedicated to the Jedi. And looking at some of our favorite Jedi from the Star Wars prequels, either from the movies themselves or from the general period. This was stemmed from, if you go back to episode 22 when Zoologist was back on, he described, since this is a podcast, not a YouTube channel, some of his awesome action figures of some great Jedi. And so that kind of planted the seed of, he's moving the camera up right now to see the wall of all the great Star Wars figures. And so... it's great that we will, you know, metaphorically remove them from the plastic. Oh, here we go. We got all our prequels, folks, indeed. Even though he's not a Jedi, Bail Organa, who I see in the right corner, is a friend of the Jedi. So it's a perfect way to get us started. Oh, wow. Look at that. I'm super envious of it. But yes, we're going to take these folks out of the metaphorical plastic, and we're going to put them on display, both as characters as in themselves. So we got some good stuff lined up for that.
I just actually just thought, it just came to my mind. I'm going to link this a little bit to, I suppose, your episode 26, Order 66. I thought that was great. I enjoyed that episode. And I just realized this is episode 33, half of 66. So
the story of
Order of 66, let's have meaning it to it. Getting to know these Jedis that all got killed in Revenge of the Sith and more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it was the Order 66 episode, for those of you who didn't listen to it, and I recommend it just to recommend my own show. That was prompted by the ongoing release at the time of the new Clone Wars series, where we got to see a little bit of Order 66, at least from the Ahsoka Tano thing, which then gave me the opportunity to look back and discuss it. And as you said, Zabologist is very important in the conversation of the Jedi, because they don't fare too well with it.
But look, we've got a chance to sort of, I just wanted to have an opportunity to chat about, I suppose, my favorite Jedi. And I think you said you're going to talk about, add on a couple more, why not, while we're here. And, I don't know, where do we want to start? Do you want to start with something? Do you want me to get into it, or?
I'd say we should just dive into Space Jesus himself, sort of the top of a lot of people's list for the Jedi, Mr. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Go and find her.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Yes, so I'm not going to say too much about Obi-Wan Kenobi because we'd be here for a long time. If you so listeners desire, love that character that much. Myself and Dale from our podcast, It's True, All of It, we joined up with another Star Wars podcast, Conversations, and we did a part one with our It's True, All of It, and part two of Obi-Wan with Conversations. So I'm not going to repeat everything I said there. That
it's a great episode, folks. I highly recommend.
Yeah. But just a few points I'll point out. One thing was interesting, because myself and Dale did read Master and Apprentice, which is how our It's True, All of It podcast came up about. I came up with the idea, let's talk about this book, which is a great book, and I love Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Master and Apprentice being, for those who have not read the book, written by Claudia Gray about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi 7 years before The Phantom Menace, and their Master and Apprentice is not sort of clicking at the beginning, so they didn't always get along. But a few interesting things we found out in that book is that Obi-Wan rocked up late to the Jedi Order by getting there at 3 years old. That's actually pretty old, apparently. I think it must be 18 months or 2 years for it to be normal. I'm still never 100% sure on that. But another interesting thing I found out about, well, that I really enjoyed with Obi-Wan Kenobi, my favorite Obi-Wan Kenobi, I must say, I suppose we all do love Ewan McGregor, of course. Well, I mean, I do. Like, I can't speak for everyone. People must love Sir Alec. But then,
we'll say everyone, let's be honest.
Yeah. But James Arnold Taylor, just acting the voice and getting opportunities to see him dive into developing that character, because obviously, especially Phantom Menace, it wasn't much about him. The story wasn't about him yet. It was about Anakin and Qui-Gon and Attack of the Clones. Yeah, sure. And Revenge of the Sith, but still, you don't really get to know a lot about him, because the movie's following on the love between Padme and Anakin. And it was just nice to see he actually fell in love with Satine Cries, the Duchess of Mandalore, in some of those episodes in Clone Wars. And him telling Anakin that he was on a mission with Qui-Gon, and you know, he hadn't been there for a few years, and then it's good to see a good callback when we finally get to the season 7 of the Clone Wars with Anakin talking to Padme, and Obi-Wan just goes, "Oh, Anakin, just say hi to Padme for me," because you know he sort of knew, but he kept it all secret because he sort of understood. And yeah, so once again, listen to our joint episode with "It's True, All of It," episode 18, or "Conversations," episode 29. And there you go. That's Obi-Wan. Unless you got anything else you want to say.
Oh no, yeah, it's all great stuff, and the Obi-Wan joint episode is great. I've listened to it twice because I listened to it in both channels to give support and love to both podcasts, and I recommend everybody do the same. Get those listener numbers up, of course. But, you know, one thing I want to throw in about Obi-Wan is there is an implication that either on Coruscant or in the Jedi Temple, there is some hairstylist out there who Obi-Wan must have a really good relationship with. Because he does not play up the whole, you know, "Oh, the Jedi are very humbled." You'd think not caring about one's appearances would fall within the whole, you know, no attachments, the whole, you know, Jedi code. But here he is, you know, he's got a lot of hair gel, but not too much. It's well positioned. His beard, especially in the second one, the third one are very well trimmed and well kempt. Yeah. And so I have to wonder if this is done entirely by him, or if this is, just kind of a go-to that, you know, for all the amenities the Jedi supposedly shun, somewhere on the temple, you know, there is, in the temple, maybe on towards the bottom level, there's, you know, some hairstylist named Barbara who's out there with a little pair of, you know, scissors, but it's two tiny little lightsabers, two tiny little kyber crystals and the scissors, snip, snip, snip. And that's how she's keeping him looking nice. It's funny because it's the total antithesis of how we see him in the original trilogy, where he has this, you know, disheveled looking hair and, you know, really plays up the old hermit well. And I have to wonder if maybe, you know, that's something that George Lucas thought of intentionally, that, you know, since we see him as an old hermit and he's trying to hide, maybe let's present him originally as this very well-groomed, I don't want to quite say fashionista, because he only has a limited amount of outfits he can pick from, but even in what he can pick them, it's impeccable. And so I've just kind of always gotten a kick out of that, of the discrepancy you see between kind of how Alex Guinness portrays him without ever having seen a hairbrush, and then, you know, Ewan's looking slick. So yeah. I just kind of always got a kick out of that. You know, there's, like you said, there's so much to say about Obi-Wan, and but I've never heard anyone talk about this particular thing, and it's always been something in the back of my mind. And first time ever articulating it, though, but I'll stick my guns to it.
I like that idea, that tiny kyber crystals for the scissors to
tiny little
cut it and groom it and trim it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then maybe there's also a little tiny kyber crystal, and they do a straight shave, a straight single. Because the other one's too, you can't use your actual lightsaber, that's too big, but just a little one to get that all
done. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a nice little, it's a little pleasantry the Jedi are allowed. You know, unfortunately, Barbara didn't fare too well during Order 66, you know, when the 501st showed up. She tried with her little scissors to try to cut the clone troopers, but they their armor's too strong against something that tiny. She may have nicked a few of them, but, you know.
Oh, I thought you were just going to say she just lost all the customers or something.
Oh, she lost all the customers, yeah. That's probably better, yeah. I had her try to stand up for a fight. Yeah, who knows? Maybe she proved herself worthy and, Palpatine brought her on to, keep himself looking fresh. Obviously, Anakin didn't need her, so,
So she's really not needed anymore. Well, speaking of haircuts, like Qui-Gon Jinn, you know, he kept it nice and long, and between Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, when I had long hair, I'd dress up as Qui-Gon, and when I have short hair, I dress up as Obi-Wan.
There you go.
Of them both. Just simple. Similar hair color. Qui-Gon, once again, I'm not going to say too much because I said a lot about him in Master and Apprentice for our first 10 episodes of It's True, All of It. And episode 9, we talked a lot about how he learnt to study to become a Force ghost. And we actually come up with a debate. Like, I never really heard from many listeners. I never followed it up much, but whether he maybe in the past, say a couple of hundred or thousands of years ago, Jedis used to become one with the Force, and then maybe where the Jedi Council was during the prequel era, they were so involved in politics that they become detached from being one with himself to learn to meditate more and study to be one with the Force. That was where Qui-Gon was sort of ahead and, you know, an important integral role, I found and I thought and I felt really a lot to the whole the saga, the fact that I'm not going to be on the Jedi Council. I got offered a seat, but I'm not going to be on there because they're all involved in politics, and it gives him a chance to be meditating and learning how to do that training. And then that training translates over to obviously Obi-Wan and so forth. So I thought that was a really amazing, important thing.
I am a manifestation of the Force, a force that consists of two parts. Living beings generate the living force, which in turn powers the wellspring that is the cosmic force.
And another amazing thing about him is, like, let's insert Dave Filoni's speech when he talks at one of those makings of The Mandalorian, when he was talking about how... let's cut, edit, insert it in here.
Go.
Beautifully said.
Perfect.
Yeah, but...
That speech came out right when I was supposed to release an episode, and I hadn't gotten around to recording anything yet, and then I watched that, and I thought, you know... That bit there is far better than anything I could string together. So I'm just not going to release an episode that week and just direct everyone's attention to it. Because it just, you know, for years I can't stand all the, like, Phantom Menace bashing or the, you know, there's the whole, the right way to watch Star Wars is the machete order where you go episode 4, 5, then 2, 3, 6, and then on chronologically from there, where you skip 1. And then, you know, Dave Filoni just flat out just dunks on everybody and showing, like, this is why you need to watch it. And the whole, the father figure bit and everything. And
yeah,
it's beautiful. It really is, because it's something that, you know, I feel like people who are fans of the prequels and of all three movies within the prequels, they're aware of that, but they've never been able to articulate it and pinpoint it, you know? It's like, as he was talking about it, I thought, holy cow, you know, this is something that I've internalized, but have never really been able to fully, you know, explain or fully explore. But that makes all the sense of why I feel like that movie and that whole arc works. I think it's fantastic.
I remember watching The Phantom Menace, and I grew up in the original trilogy era, and sure, they were the movies that I loved, that I grew up with, that I was familiar with, and The Phantom Menace was quite different. It was a bit of a shock because we had different ways of how we thought it was going to all start. But I remember a friend of mine saying, as usual, people my age growing up with the original saying, we don't like The Phantom Menace. But he goes, but I really love that Qui-Gon and that whole story. It really tells a story. Sure, I might not like the movie, but there's a very good full-on story. And that's the whole point. George is telling the story from the beginning. And it is an integral part and an integral role. And I find it – I really love Qui-Gon. I really love – just putting the connection, and that's why I loved reading Master and Apprentice, to find out a bit more about him or more in more depth where we can go with him. And that one thing I absolutely always love about him is whenever he comes in, so he's coming in as a Force ghost, like in the Clone Wars, Liam Neeson is doing the voice. He's just, I thought he portrayed him really well. I love it. So anyway,
It's, I feel like when you have a character like that who is, has as limited appearances as he does, you know, just being one film and scattered around, I think it's very powerful to get the same actor providing the voice in all mediums. You know, I understand when you look at someone like Obi-Wan, like we were talking about with James Arnold Taylor, and, you know, that he played a big role in the Clone Wars, and it's hard to expect, or more importantly, to pay Ewan McGregor to dedicate that much time to lend the voice. So, you know, understandably, or like Matt Lantern for Anakin. But it's nice when you can get some level of carryover, especially when it's little nuggets like that. When just, you know, here's just a little spattering of Qui-Gon here, a little bit of him there. And, you know, I'm sure that when we get the Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus, whenever that rolls out, that, you know, Qui-Gon, as portrayed by Liam Neeson, will show up in some way or another. You know, maybe for the first time we'll actually see his manifestation as a Blue Force ghost. Maybe he'll just remain being a, you know, a voice. But I think it'll be fascinating to see, you know, how they choose to reintroduce that master-apprentice relationship in the show. Because what they could end up doing is making the show even the master-apprentice dynamic could play... could be the main story. I'm not saying it will be, but that could be the main story between Obi-Wan trying to learn from his fallen master. But obviously, you know, Disney has deep pockets. And so, you know, if Liam Neeson needs to be in it a lot, they will compensate him accordingly. So that's what's kind of fun with that, when you can have the money to execute it.
And he's got such a powerful, unique voice anyway. I always just love his voice. So it's got to be used. And it would be great to see him train Obi-Wan. But yeah. I've got Yoda next. So once again, another big character. We could say so much, and I'm not going to talk too much about him at all. Just all I would say is it was funny. I was listening to another podcast, and someone like that, they were just chatting to their wives and talking about how the love of Star Wars and how they're involved. And they're saying, I'm not so much a huge fan of Star Wars, but Yoda, you know, I was so angry with Yoda. he got so fooled by Palpatine, but I mean, they all got fooled, you know, but it was just so funny how they're going on about it. But I do love Yoda's tiny little Jedi starfighter. Season 6.
I actually just picked up the Lego set for that. Maybe it was a month and a half ago or a little longer than that. I was on eBay looking for some other things, and it showed up. It was, you know, when it came out, it was $25, and it was a little more than that, but not too much. So I picked it up and built the little thing. And it's funny because it constructs very similarly to a TIE fighter, just in terms of how that Lego set's built.
Yeah.
And I'll have to send you a picture of it. It's a cute little Lego set. It came out during the Rogue One releases. So, you know, the box had the Death Trooper in the top right corner. Yeah, so it's like kind of funny that they were sort of sitting on that, because, you know, season six, I guess that came out in 2014, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
2014 in the spring. And so they were sitting on that design up until at least 2016, if not early 2017, when they said, let's go ahead and roll out this little starfighter. People who are kind of Lego insiders or follow Lego sets that come out know that the TIE fighter aesthetic is probably Lego's favorite in terms of Star Wars stuff. Anything that can kind of fit the TIE fighter mold, they'll push out. So it's funny when you look at how it's constructed and built to look like a tiny little TIE fighter, because you have a little, you know, orb in the middle where he sits, a room for a little astromech. It comes with a little R2-D2, because R2 went with him on those missions.
Yeah, and then he did too.
You have the curved wings coming out on the side, but they're very small. You know, it's about the whole thing's maybe, you know, this big. I'm holding, I guess, would roughly be the size of a very big sandwich. but yeah, it's a neat little neat little starfighter set, and fun to watch too. Yeah, you would imagine it makes all the sense that Yoda, as Grand Master of the Order, would have his own special starfighter, especially granted that he's smaller than everybody else.
Yeah, he wouldn't fly
the classic Jedi starfighter. As awesome as the classic Jedi starfighter is, you know, I love the one that Obi-Wan flies and the one that Anakin flies, but his is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was able to get there might be one out there, I've never seen it, like a toy, like, you know, with my action figures, that's sort of size. And I mean, also just with Yoda, as we were saying, he was using that Jedi Starfighter to go to Dagobah and those other places on those missions where Qui-Gon was training him. And it just, there's a connection. So even the Grandmaster Yoda, who knows it so much, and then the Qui-Gon, who was always against the council and stuff. Hey, Yoda, I need to teach you. And that's a good lesson just in general about how we can all teach each other. And no one's the be-all, know-all of everything. So that's one thing I do love about these stories in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, you never stop learning.
Truly wonderful the mind of a child is.
It's you know, what's fun about Qui-Gon and Yoda is they probably complete the holy trinity of people who argue that green lightsabers are the best. With Qui-Gon, Yoda, and then of course whatchamacallit, Return of the Jedi, Luke, are kind of those are sort of the main green lightsaber holders in terms of the main. Yeah. I still personally lean towards blue just because I love Obi-Wan so much and I love Kanan.
Yeah.
And the Anakin lightsaber. But, you know, a lot of powerhouses are swinging around a green one. So
yeah, I've got to say I'm one of them because I love Qui-Gon. I loved it when Luke finally constructed his own lightsaber and just the whole thing of back in the day, back then, it was a blue lightsaber. You got the Return of the Jedi, Luke with the blue, and then obviously because of the sky, that's why I changed it to green. And then when the movie comes out, you go, it's green, and you go, wow, it's a different color. Wow, this is so exciting. So that's my love of it and other reasons why. But sticking with Yoda, he's got two animals, and the only reason why I ever learned about these animals, pets, riding, however you want to call it, is because I once went into the shop and I saw Yoda's cancel, like the insect. For those viewers, listeners out there who's not sure what it is, look it up, Yoda's cancel. It was never really used in the movie. I think there was a scene they were going to use that either got deleted or never got fully made. And I'm going from memory, either the movie of the Clone Wars or somewhere in the first season, I'm pretty sure Anakin and Ahsoka ride one. And you can also see a miniature version of this cancel in Yoda's Dagobah landing in Revenge of the Sith, like a really small one. Oh, that's a deleted scene, I think, too. So that's one of his animals. Do you know much about the cancel? Or have you seen the toy?
I recognize the toy. And I recognize the lineup, but any sort of trivia or observation of it, you got me beat on there. I think it's cool that riding an insect-looking thing is kind of non-standard, because normally when you think of kind of the classic mounts, it's, you know, here's a version of a large horse or some variant of that, or, you know, kind of a large dog, just either in science fiction or fantasy in general.
Yeah.
You know, already, you know, the Viractyl is such a unique thing of here's riding a giant lizard with feathers in terms of uniqueness, but it's kind of fun to take the additional step, like, okay, what's another crazy looking animal that we can turn into a mountain, especially since Yoda's on the smaller side. You know, you get a little bit more creative with what he can jump on, so that's cool. I didn't know about the it showing up in his hut as it, that's kind of neat.
And then the other one, the same thing happened. I was shopping during the prequel era. I would always go to in Australia, we've got our Kmarts, our Targets, our Big W's, Coles, Woolies, whatever. And I'd just always go to the toy section and see what's going on. And then I found Kaibuck, like a horse type creature that Yoda rode in the cartoon Clone Wars. And these guys are not to be confused with what's called an Orback in The Rise of Skywalker. Because if you actually try to Google it or Wikipedia it or something, you will get, they'll direct you to the Orbacks. But no, it's not the Rise of the Skywalker Orbacks, those horses. It's a different type of Kaibuck horse. And there's not much in there. This is not, I'm not sure if this is really canon, but I thought it was cool anyway, so I share it. Apparently they run 90 kilometers an hour. They're from Kashyyyk. And Yoda has so much care and respect for these Kaibuck friends that he had. It's because Jedis could not have possession. And apparently 100 years before the Clone Wars actually began, he had owned 33 different Kaibucks over time.
Huh. I like that. I you know, even if that's been pushed aside to the Legends category. I will keep that in my so-called headcanon, if you will. You know, it also explain like why he has a one of the many reasons why he has a good relationship with the Wookiees. You know, maybe he's got a Kaibuck herder or breeder or somewhere, you know, he would fly out to on occasion and check out, you know, the latest stock and see what's going on in Kashyyyk, or somebody who had a good relationship with the animals. That's fun. I like that.
Another favorite, obviously, and another big popular one, Mace Windu.
He's too dangerous to be left alive.
As we can say a lot about him, we'll be here all night. Mm-hmm. You've got to get on with your day and work and do whatever you've got to do, and I've got to go to bed. So I'll firstly just say, when I got his toy, the first time I remember in Phantom Menace, he came with a blue lightsaber, and then obviously by the time of the Attack of the Clones came out, when it was revealed, he had a purple lightsaber, it changed to purple. And that was vice versa for Ki-Adi Mundi. So I always found that really unique, and I still got that original blue Mace Windu lightsaber. He's from his home world is Harun Kal. I hope I pronounce it right. And his apprentice is Deepa Bilaba, which I hadn't put as one of my favorite ones. She's all right. She's pretty good Jedi, but, and yeah, as we know, he's got the rare Kyber crystal purple colored lightsaber, which I love. And you hear it's got canonized as a rare color in Master and Apprentice, because Obi-Wan says, oh, they normally come in green and blue, Sith are red, but that never happens. That hasn't happened for a long time. And but purple's very rare. And, I mean, I'm sad to sort of hear that, because I'd love to sort of see more, but you never know. Disney can just change things if they want. They put a yellow one in there, this Ray, which is cool. And I've always loved, there's a meme that's been going on many years ago where there's a photo of Mace Windu with his purple lightsaber and his Jedi robes all stained in purple. And he goes, which one of you put my lightsaber in my robes in the wash? I love that. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen this. No, that's fantastic.
I'll send it to you then. We'll get it out there. We'll get the listeners to have a look.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Yeah, one thing regarding how him and Ki have the lightsaber switch, I kind of have this headcanon where, you know, they were each going on their respective missions, and there just was sort of the classic blunder of, you know, accidentally picked up each other's lightsabers during an awkward, you know, discussion in the locker room or something. Like, you know, it's like, oh, Master Windu, you really need it. Like, oh, and he's quickly fumbling around, you know, looking, and he just quickly grabs, thinking it's his, because they're right next to each other. And, you know, I know the hilts look different, but it was just enough. And he goes out there, and the first time he ignites, like, what on earth? He's got this blue lightsaber swinging around, and that key maybe held out a bit longer, holding on to the purple one. Was like, this purple one's pretty cool, and took a while for him to get it back. You know, maybe Mace had to do him a favor, you know, to get it back by the time of Attack of the Clones. And that was a source of contention between the two of them, you know, that one time they awkwardly swapped lightsabers. And I say it was an accident. Maybe it was intentional. Maybe Ki-Adi Mundi wanted to see what it was like swinging around the purple blade just out of curiosity, you know.
Yeah, hey, this purple blade will match my purple clone troopers that I've actually got. That army. Mace Windu's always been suspicious of Anakin and Palpatine, I'd always felt. And I like his purple carry-on with his purple Jedi Starfighter and his matching purple R2 unit, which is, well, R4-M6. I got the toy of that one as well. Love it.
Lovely.
And I'll just say, he was really cool in the cartoon series. I'm not sure if a lot of listeners have watched that. We have, you know, the first time in 2003 or 4 when they brought them out, the two series of Clone Wars. He did some really good punches, force punches with the battle droids.
And that one episode where he takes out like 500 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's just the most like God mode scene I've ever associated with Star Wars is that one. I'm just flying down in the middle, superhero punching the ground, and they all go flying backwards. And it's like a solid 3 to 5 minutes of him just totally beasting him.
Shows how powerful he is. And then I just wanted to read this out because it's my favorite line. I've actually read it out of my podcast when the episode came out. So in the series 7 of Clone Wars, I love him and Obi-Wan are about to take on some battle droids. And he goes, "My name is General Mace Windu of the Jedi Order. At this point of the Clone Wars, I have dismantled and destroyed over 100,000 of your Type 1 battle droids. I'm giving you an opportunity to peacefully lay down your weapons so that you may be reprogrammed to serve a better purpose than spreading the mindless violence and chaos in which you have inflicted upon the galaxy."
Oh, that is a fantastic line. Yeah, I remember I went to Star Wars Celebration Anaheim in 2015. And, you know, by that point, the Clone Wars had been, you know, canceled. No chances of any new ones. But they released the unfinished episodes of the Bad Batch that had this line in it, and I just remember it was so cool sitting in there because they just showed all of them at once. I was watching it with Dave Filoni and company, and it was hilarious because, you know, they'd fly to a planet, for instance, and be labeled, you know, planet name here or stuff like that, you know. So it was very clunky, and just, but when that line was delivered, the whole crowd went bananas.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
it's so
cool hearing him saying that. And then you're like, I don't know how big the digital stage, which is what it was called at the time, was. I think that's now called Galaxy Stage. It was at least 3,000 people, maybe pushing 10. I'm horrible at estimating people, just all cheering, like, oh, yeah, you know, at the same time. So it was a great Star Wars moment for me. And then, of course, to see them, you know, keep that line and have it with the full, fully rendered with the moving lips and everything, and the doofy battle droids thrown in there, better looking. Oh. It's great.
Oh, such a character. And now, as we're talking about the cartoon animated series, two of my favorites that were in the cartoon of the kidnapping of the Chancellor, we got Fal Maduma. Is that how we say it? I've never really know how to pronounce it because I'm not sure if I've ever heard his name being said.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Madama or Madama or Maduma. I don't know where the emphasis, but it's definitely Foul, unless they're trying to do something where it's Foul.
Well,
you know,
this,
if you break it up.
I found out that his name was inspired by Fal Maduma's Middle Eastern fava bean dish. So if some people can enlighten us on here, like some listeners that are very familiar with the Middle Eastern areas and the language, and they might know how to pronounce his name because that's where they got the name from. So there you go. And for those that are not sure what he is, he's that cantina-looking creature called a Tals. Is that right? Tals?
Tals, yes.
Protect the Chancellor. And you.
Yeah, and from the planet Olzok, number 3. Is that right? Do you know? Yeah.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, that's.
And once again, I've only seen him in the cartoon or the toy figure. That's all that exists of him. And I was so excited to find the toy, so I bought it. It's so huge. I only managed to get one, so I haven't got one out of the packet. And yeah, he was with his friend. Is it Roron Korob?
That's how I would say it. Yeah, it looks pretty phonetic there. Yeah. So,
yeah, the Ithorian, where he uses his big Ithorian blow the first time we see that. And Shaak Ti goes, "Ithorians got a lot of strength with their breath or whatever." And he's got a unique looking handle lightsaber because I've got the toy and I've got one out of the packet. I managed to get two of them. There's not much about those guys, but if you don't mind about the Spanish version, my Spanish lately.
Oh.
And that's something to do on Zoom. So Roron Korob era un Jedi Itoriano que protegió al Chancellor Supremo Sheev Palpatine del General Separatista Grievous cuando esta asaltó la Ciudad Galáctica en un intento de secuestrar a Palpatine durante la Batalla de Coruscant. Grievous redujo la seguridad de la República y los Jedi, incluyó Korob, y lo mató. Korob tiene ojos de color negro, piel marrón clara y estaba equipado con un sable de luz que imita una hoja verde. the green lightsaber. There you go.
I take it back. I said that it was Yoda, Qui-Gon, and Luke that was the holy trinity of the green lightsaber. But I think one of them has to go to make room for Roron Korob. He's got a real classic Jedi right there. One thing going up to Foul really quickly again, just about the towels. I was a bit disappointed when you get to the 3D Clone Wars and they run into the Tals as kind of, you know, the indigenous people who are, you know, butting heads with the blue-skinned people. Like, oh, you know, they're just crazy, extremist natives, and they're the bad guys working for the separatists. And you end up realizing, no, there's actually just some misunderstandings going on. I was really hoping that was going to be a way to sneak in, you know, Foul in the show somehow with a Tal's Jedi, or at least showing that a Tal's person was force sensitive. But I guess the whole idea is if they're a hidden society, you know, we didn't want them to find out there was a Jedi hanging out there. It wouldn't make sense. Or a force sensitive who, you know, was an adult who they missed. But it would have been cool, or maybe to see him as a kid and like, we're taking him to the Jedi Order, you know, just a little nod to that. But, you know, I guess it didn't fit within the larger narrative they were wanting to take there. But the Tals are cool, and they also show up in Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO. If you are with the Empire, you have to fight a lot of them. The Tals end up being kind of they end up going to Hoth and hanging out there as sort of new Old Republic agents. I think that's correct. Maybe it's some other snowy planet, but it's kind of funny nonetheless how it's, you know, seeing what they do to grow out these random background aliens from the original cantina scene and putting them in unique places is a lot of fun.
Oh, I love it. And yeah, you're right. There was an opportunity there. I wish the story was written that Foul had to go along on that mission as a Jedi. It goes, these are my people. And I don't know, have something about where it was very rare that he was force sensitive. And they're still cut off, or they're still like those indigenous people or something there. That would have been nice. But anyway, we didn't work hard enough to write be an animator or write a director, so we can't complain. So it's like, I'll just say out to the listeners, it's like, hey, if you don't like somebody's intro music or you want to change it, do something about it. I have none.
Anywho, that's 7 Jedi down and many, many more to go. You know, we had such a good conversation, Sabologist and I, that this episode just had to be split into 2 parts. So I hope you've enjoyed what has come out this week. Just wait 7 more days and you'll see all the rip, rootin', tootin' force users from the prequels eras that just make us tingle a little bit and feel a little good about ourselves. I don't know, that sounded better in my head than as I was saying it out loud, but that's kind of the fun things that this show is all about here. You never know what you're gonna get. So, per usual, I will catch you all around. See you next time. Bibbles, bubble, bubble, seal, bibbles, bubble, bubble, seal, bibbles, bubble, bubble, seal, bibbles, bubble, bubble, seal, bibbles.